Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There are stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like worried of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.
Well, this looks like a job for me, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Football Ramble. England go 4 points clear at the top of the group, and Peacock Farrell saved another pen. It's Thursday, 9th of September. I'm Marcus Speller.
I'm Andy Brassel.
And I'm Vidisha Dantaraja.
Welcome one and all to the Football Ramble. It's always sad when the international football break comes to an end, but don't be unhappy that it's ended. Be happy that it happened. It will be back again, of course, Andy Brassel. And perhaps next time, England could clinch qualification to the World Cup in Qatar.
Yeah, they could. And you know what? I particularly enjoyed your intro about England go 4 points clear at the top of the group.
It's the narrative everyone's saying.
It is the narrative that everyone should be saying.
Should be saying, Andy. Well, they will be on this show because we're going to put that right, aren't we, Vish? People talking about England losing their perfect record in qualification. People are forgetting that a point on the road against your toughest opponent isn't too bad. It's annoying that there was an injury time equaliser, of course, but can't we see the big picture, Vish? Can't we?
I think we flew too close to the sun.
Did we?
And now we want to fly at the sun again.
Uh-huh.
So well, we just want winds, don't we?
October will come around soon.
Okay. It will. It will. It threatens to do that every year, doesn't it?
It does. Yes, it does. A lot of people inside the National Stadium in Warsaw, in Poland, of course, there was some regrettable booing and all that kind of stuff. But it was a feisty game, Andy, it's fair to say. And what did you make of it? Sort of in general, I suppose there was some pinching, there was some kicking, there was some lack of refereeing, decision making early on.
It was all a bit League One. Let the game flow.
It was.
But it's funny.
After the fifth or sixth one, I thought to myself, I know we like to let the game flow, but at some point, you're going to have to make a decision.
It was quite a tactile game, wasn't it?
Yeah. Well, I suppose he did.
That's a great word.
I suppose he did make a decision in not to. Giving the foul, but if you see what I mean.
Yeah, I particularly like the way you've planted flush in the middle of my head the idea of Paulo Sousa, of all people, a refined man with very complex and interesting ideas on the game, going, come on, lads, let's get amongst them.
Well, that's what he said.
It felt like it in that first half, in which I thought Poland were very, very good in the first half. And it was really actually not a million miles different, I thought, from the performance against Hungary. Because after halftime, England crank it up a notch.
Yes.
But there's just greater resistance in Poland because they're simply a better side, better coached and better organised.
I was a bit annoyed, Vish, that Sousa's clearly, he read the cheat code, the England cheat code, which is, get the ball down the left to Grealish. Someone makes an overlapping run. He then knocks it to them. They square and Sterling scores. He's aware of that. He was aware of that last night. Because if you saw every time England went down the left, England usually have about three or four players going forward. Poland seemed to know that was going to happen.
I mean, yeah, that was quite annoying. Because fine, we did it a lot during the Euros, but don't ruin our fun. You saw how much we enjoyed it. Someone stuck a flare up his ass because of it. Don't let him let us live our lives.
Yeah.
It was interesting though that.
But the first goal against Hungary was that.
Yeah.
There's so many, as you say, the first goal against Germany, even the goal in the final.
Yeah.
Not, slightly different.
It was from the same playbook, albeit played out on the different side. But I think this was quite a good game for England to have and probably broadly quite a good result for them to have, because I thought it was interesting.
I agree with you there.
Because, there have generally been three plays that have worked against England, traditionally over the last 20 years, and that's generally been quite irritating.
Score. Yeah.
Yeah.
Goals. Good performance.
Beyond the stuff that matters, I suppose, being quite irritating man-to-man.
Yeah.
Congesting midfield, generally, and also just sitting back and waiting for them to do something to you. Mm-hmm. And Poland did all three really well yesterday, and England still found a way through. Now, they didn't obviously get the result they wanted, but I thought there were elements of that second half which I thought were really encouraging, actually. Even the way that England were willing to scrap and fight. There were a few moments, when they were 1-0 up, probably, 5 minutes before the equaliser, where, Kane was coming back and, bodying to body someone, and Phillips is constantly getting stuck in. There was a real sense that they can all do the flashy stuff, and they can all do the, the gritty stuff, which was good to see. And it was a shame that the equaliser should have been defended better. But I mean, there were a few times during that second half as well, despite the fact England had so much of the ball, that you still found yourself marvelling at Lewandowski's touch.
Yep.
There was a ball from Bednarek over the top where he leaps and catches it right on his toe.
Yeah, it was beautiful.
And then has that same nimbleness to get through and cross the ball for the equaliser.
The assist is incredible.
Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah, he's picked him out perfectly. I mean, Andy, there's a couple of narratives going on post-game here where, and I think everyone has missed the point of, it is a qualification campaign. This idea of England's perfect record has gone. It's kind of like, look, Italy have had two results that they wouldn't have wanted in qualification since they've come back. Spain have, Spain are struggling, and let's be honest,
they needed that assist really from Greece beating Sweden last night to put them back in the box seat.
And Spain, some might have said shaded that semi final in the Euros not that long ago. So there's two big sides who have had bad.
They had five successive draws, didn't they?
Exactly.
If you're going back and including Switzerland,
but
that's the thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Isn't it, Marcus? That we always forget that qualification is totally unrelated to the final. final tournament. It's about qualifying.
Yes.
It is really about that.
Yes, but on that though, Andy, and I do agree with you broadly, but then people have also started saying the lack of substitutions. Now, Southgate has often been criticised for that. You think of the big games, you know, the semi-final of the World Cup, the Euros final perhaps. People said he was maybe a bit slow to react there. There's that incredible stat. This is the first time since the game against Germany in the semi-final of the Euro 96 that England haven't made a substitution. And also, there is this trope that people are saying England have a slender lead and they can't hold on to it. So if, you know, do you think that that has a bearing then when it gets to tournaments? Because these are things that England have struggled with a little bit under Southgate.
I think the substitution thing is an issue, and it really surprised me because I just thought, like, if we overlook the tactical management of the game, just be nice to the players. They've played a third international in a week. Why are you not giving five of them a rest when you can? Mm-hmm. If you're a club manager, you would be absolutely doing your nut at that. That, like, if we don't look at, like, England managing the game, and the way Southgate explained it afterwards didn't really make sense, where he said, well, we wanted to make the substitutions, but we wanted to make substitutions at the end, but then they scored, so it wasn't worth making them because we just would have been adding time on when we were level. They scored in like the 92nd minute.
Yeah.
Well, that just doesn't make any sense at all. In terms of someone like him who is so in touch with his players' needs, I'm surprised about that. Yeah, without even talking about the tactical.
Yeah, he also mentioned that, you know, we were in control, which is why we didn't make any changes. And I thought, well, I mean, that's part of being a good tactician, is to know that how you can make changes and still
stay in
control. Yeah, stay in control, yeah.
Yeah, and totally. And I think you have to look at the fact that for a lot of that second half, Poland were really struggling to stay with England. Mm. I think if you look at the way the foul count leapt, if you go from like 10 minutes into the second half to like probably about 10 minutes from the end, it's remarkable. Like, obviously, as we said, the ref let a lot go. But the foul count is pretty even at about 50, 55 minutes. By the time you get to 75, 80, Poland have made twice as many fouls as England.
Yeah, and that shows you, doesn't it? That, you know, Grealish got a bit of treatment, as he tends to do, and so on. But, I mean, yes, some people are saying, you know, Jude Bellingham's on the bench. You know, if you did indeed want to go a little bit more conservative, you can take Mount off and stick Bellingham in the centre.
Yeah, and it's his kind of game.
It is.
And he can handle himself and he can control the play because he's got such a great range of passing.
Well, I look forward to him becoming an England regular. Not that, and that's no comment on Rice and Phillips, of course, because I think, you know, phenomenal players. So do you think that there is a trope here, Vish, with England? You know, this is obviously nothing new. Does that concern you? Because, yes, in the grand scheme of things, just get through qualification. We see this with France and Italy, and maybe Spain or Portugal as well.
But you're right, it's practice as well, isn't it?
Yeah, and now England, really, that's their toughest game from now until the World Cup. Everyone is very confident England will qualify. You wouldn't imagine them to slip up, of course, there. Now, you can have friendly games and, yeah, okay, a bit of stuff, but this one had a little bit more bite to it.
Yeah, yeah, which is why I was also impressed with how the players acquitted themselves. And, you know, they've been to two pretty tough places play away in the last week, and I think they've carried themselves with distinction. And I'm just talking about the football side of it. I thought they maintained their composure really well, especially coming after the end of that first half, because they could have come into the second half and completely lost their heads, and they didn't. They just decided to control the game and yeah, you know, hit Poland back in the right way. I think it's weird because, as Brassel alluded to there, Southgate is very conscientious and knows exactly of the needs of his players, and has worked with these players for so long that he knows what they're capable of as well. And it spoke to me that I think he knows what they're capable of, but I don't think he knows or trusts them in, like, literally in an actual game.
So, for example, when Jesse Lingard was warming up, you know, why not? You know, you could have brought him on, say, for Sterling or something.
Well, the basic thing would have been legs, wouldn't it? Legs out wide exactly. When you're 1-0 lead, so you have a bit of an outlet up there.
So you're saying he doesn't trust these players that much? Because there was talk of he never trusted Grealish. Now he obviously does.
Yeah, I just think it's not even trust. I think he knows they're good players, but I don't think he realises how good they are.
So do you think
I think Bellingham's included in that, actually.
Do you think he's too pragmatic then? Because for me, I was watching it thinking, what would I do? Who would I bring on? And I thought, well, Southgate knows that if he sticks like this and the game carries on, England will not lose the game. No way England are going to lose this game. Now, some people say, well, that's very negative thinking and so on. Yeah, you're fine. But again, in the grand scheme of things, a qualification, a point is perfectly acceptable on paper. The manner of it, of course, the way it plays out, it is a bit frustrating. But some people saying that Southgate, he doesn't know how to play this. You know, look at the squad he's got, look at the team he's got. He completely mismanages them. Well, I would say I understand that point, but to counter that point, the squad he's got, he's moulded and shaped, actually. Obviously, those players have been, you know, by the academies and the clubs and so on. Harry Maguire had never really played international football until Southgate. Jordan Pickford, people said he should have been inside. Southgate stuck with him. Even John Stones at club level has been a bit patchy. I know last season, obviously, they won the league and he was decent. Phillips and Rice, Southgate has nurtured them at international level.
It's very much his team. Yes,
Raheem
right.
Sterling, again, another one. People have said shouldn't have. He's kept faith with him. Sterling scoring a lot of goals, you know. If you look at that side, as you say, Andy, you know, he's nurtured and he's brought him in. So when people say, oh, he doesn't realise what he's got, and if someone else managed them. No, but the reason why we're excited about this England squad, you could certainly argue, is because of Southgate.
Yeah, I mean, really, he played that game last night like it was in the middle of a tournament, I think.
Yeah.
Rather than thinking, let's conserve for the future or whatever. That's what I thought was a bit weird about it.
Right.
Do you think then, you know, you mentioned about this is his team and therefore, by proxy, this is his 11. And do you think that his trust is implicitly with those 11 players out there and less so with those on the bench? Which I suppose it explains why they started on the bench. But I always think that...
He never played it like that during the Euros, did he?
Well, he was...
He shuffled the pack. Like,
to a point, but he was also very late on in-game changes, I thought, during the Euros.
Yeah, I meant more in terms of the starting lineups.
Right, okay.
So it feels that the 11 on the day is the one that he feels is the one to win on the day. Now, that 11 might be completely different once you get a little bit down the line.
Mm. Yeah, very true. I mean, Mason Mount's a player he obviously likes very well, and him and Jack Grealish forming lots of partnerships. No, they were passing a lot to each other, and so much was made of that. And again,
do you think Declan felt a little bit left out?
Yeah, I'm interested because Jack Grealish is like the cooler new guy, isn't he?
Possibly. That's why he kept him on the pitch. Declan, he didn't want to make a substitution because obviously he brought Declan Morris off in the Euro final.
Do you think, because it starts, because I remember being a kid and it starts with, oh, can I bring so-and-so along? Yeah, sure. And then you realise they're a bit cooler, you size them up.
Declan, what do you think of his hair? It's really cool, isn't
it? Yeah, and then suddenly like you're walking through town and you see them hanging out together and you're like, oh, all right.
Do you think Declan Rice is going to like grow his hair and have like a little Alice band?
Well, yeah, he just like sees them over or, you know, on the left wing and comes over, lads, what are we doing here? Southgate's out like, no, sit with Calvin. No, it's fine. Oh, yeah, I've got a hairband as well. Yeah.
That could be it. Oh, dear. What about Harry Kane's goal, Fish?
I thought it was excellent. I thought the criticism of Szczesny was comical. I think it's just based on the idea that every goal has to go in the corner, other it's a failure. I thought it was really good because, you know, as I mentioned earlier about how teams are playing against England, there was very much... Kane didn't really have much, you know, in the box and had to drop back. And I think it's the kind of goal that was so good that other teams will see and realise that, shit, they have other options, which I think is really important, actually, for this England side. And I thought maybe not so much because it was a draw, but I wonder with a win and if they'd gone on to score a couple more goals, knowing that you have that option of someone who can shoot from range.
Totally.
Because England don't actually have that, which is interesting.
I completely agree with you. And I think, Andy, that's it. When there is a big block in front of you, to be able to produce a moment of quality like that is a reminder.
It's one of the things that makes him so special, isn't it?
Yeah.
Because the thing is, I think if you're looking at that as a potential rival of England, you think, well, okay, we've got to come out and pick him up 30 yards from goal now.
Yeah. Mm.
But you know that if you go and pick him up, you leave the space behind, England have the runners to exploit it, he can actually deliver the pass to find those runners
indeed.
As well. But I agree with Vish. I thought the criticism of Szczesny was really quite harsh because, one, it sort of just almost skims Bednarek's brow, so he doesn't see it until it's past his head, and then it takes a big swerve.
Well, I think Ian Wright mentioned on the highlights that he takes a step to his right to try and see the damn thing, essentially to see because the defender's in the way. And I think sometimes people don't appreciate that with goalkeepers because when your weight is on his right foot and, of course, the ball goes past him on his left, that little shift of weight with the ball, with the fizz and the swerve on it, it makes all the difference, you know. And from England's point of view, it was a great goal, of course. But it wasn't the winning goal because of that Polish equaliser. Which did set off that stadium in quite amazing fashion, didn't it, really? But, of course, England won't face a real test now, you would argue, between now and I nearly said next summer. Well, of course, that would have been now until next winter. But yes, so they'll be back October and November, of course. Only a month away. It's mad, isn't it, to think about that. So there we are. So, yeah, I mean, overall, though, in England's three games, I mean, obviously Andorra's a bit of a gimme, but how are you feeling about England, Andy? I'm feeling pretty positive.
Pretty good. Yeah. I think they've felt in control of all of that. I mean, you just take away the equaliser, and I know it's a bit sort of selective memory, perhaps, but if you take away the Polish equaliser, you say England have controlled that game perfectly.
Yeah, but then we saw this in the Euros, but when they came up against the side, as they did in Italy, who were their equals or maybe a touch better, some might argue, that's when they sort of come unstuck and trying to keep
but
control.
But that's in the final?
It's in the final.
Yeah.
And we've talked about this before, haven't we? Well, I've talked about this before with Germany. You look at the way from 2006, the journey to winning the 2014 World Cup, there's a few near misses. Mm. And there's a lot of discussion domestically about what are we missing? What's the little bit that we're missing? Now, to get into a point where you can have that conversation, where you've had two successive major semi-finals, you know, you've got to take the... You don't go from going out in the groups in Brazil to winning the World Cup. It just does not happen. Yeah. So I think to gradually build it across tournaments, it feels like there's really good progression, I think.
All right, Andy. Well, on behalf of Twitter, we don't want journeys, we want trophies, all right?
So you don't want a journey to a trophy?
Well, if it ends up
he's
in
got
a,
you there.
If it ends up in a... If you can guarantee me a trophy, then I'll do the journey.
I'm not even going to block you, I'm going to mute you.
Oh dear, we'll have a nice chat with Vish. Gentlemen, elsewhere in the qualifiers last night, Germany beat Iceland 4-0. Iceland, they're struggling, Vish. They're not the side that we remember all those years ago when they hammered England and put them out.
Seems very specific in England memory, that, doesn't it? Oh God, how far they've fallen.
Just on you know what Andy was saying there about journeys and so on. Really wasn't that long ago when you know Kane was playing. I'm pretty sure he played against Iceland. But anyway, enough of that.
Crap. Pretty sure he was on corners. Yeah,
he was on corners. Yeah, didn't score any of them. But Timo Werner did score last night. Nice to see. He missed one or two, but he's back among the
goal scorers. Don't I mean, like, I think, you know, Werner slander is quite basic, but you're doing him a great service there by saying, oh, he missed one or two. I mean, he missed an absolute rotter.
Rotter.
Like, it was so bad, the defender went to console him and thought, oh, I probably shouldn't, it's a competitive game, isn't it? It's, oh, poor bastard.
Are you becoming sympathetic to that dreadful Chelsea fan who started shouting, "Get him out of the club!"
Maybe you know he should have been there, but no, it was a bad miss.
I have a strong theory that
well, hang on, it's time... a theory, and we'll decide if it's strong.
I have a strongly felt theory.
Okay, there you go.
I have a strongly felt theory that I think this time next year, Timo Werner will be playing for Dortmund.
Ooh,
I think. That
I thought you were going to say another country because it was in the context of international football.
England,
it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think the in compensation for Jamal Musiala, oh God, he's been good again this week. He's been really good again this week.
Why does that make so much sense? That's annoying.
But I think international swaps notwithstanding, I think the die's already cast for Timo Werner at Chelsea. And especially with Lukaku, not to say they can't play together, because of course we know Werner attacks very well from the wide positions and the pace is a huge part of it. I think there is that growing sense that the way, I mean, that wasn't particularly polite. I mean, it was a training session with kids, wasn't it?
Yeah.
You know, loads of people on school holiday having a nice time and then some random go, "Grow up a club." But the way everyone jumped on it and tried to hush it, it was a bit too... Yeah, some of us think that, actually.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
I know exactly. What you
and
mean,
I think the fact that Lukaku is going to be the king of Stamford Bridge for many years to come, I think that means something. I think a little long term loan or something to Dortmund next year. I could see that happen.
A little loan.
Haaland's successor. What are you saying?
Nah.
Ooh, you'd feel a bit shortchanged, wouldn't you?
Depends how much change you've got.
He is one of those Dortmund 5'8" guys, isn't he?
Yeah, he is.
I don't think they'll accept.
He actually looks
they
like
they won't be
a...
happy, Andy, if he goes there. They don't like him in Germany. They'll hate it. Dortmund fans would hate it if he went there.
They'll get over it.
No, they won't. He's got quite.
They'll get over it.
Yeah, he's got very likable personality.
He does, but he's not liked in Germany.
No, that's true.
So, you know, all I'm saying is that.
So you're saying he should go to Bayern Munich?
Correct. That's absolutely perfect. Germany, though, going back to them, they've scored 12 goals in the first three games under Hansi Flick. That was against Liechtenstein, Armenia and Iceland. But, you know, you can only beat and score what is put in front of you. Did you hear that the plane that the Mannschaft were on had to make an emergency stop in Edinburgh on their way back from Iceland? All was fine.
Little mini break. Well, yeah, at least they deserved.
That's how the Scottish Tourist Board spun it, Andy. They said that the Germans were flying over Scotland. They couldn't resist the beauty and the charm of the country. And so they thought, come down, taste our water, look at our views and enjoy yourselves.
Enjoy our freshness.
Maybe get some proper refreshment.
It's a good freshers week, I can tell you. Yeah.
Naughty. Oh, yeah, you experienced it, didn't you?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Less said about that, the better.
Four times in a row.
But I think as well, they might have stopped to get some decent scran. Because I told you, didn't I, that when... I told you guys that when...
That's not the reason they made an emergency landing.
It might have been.
Depends what time of day it was.
Have you ever had tablet, lads? Has anyone had tablet on here? Yeah, well, guess... Right, come on, pilot. Do the good thing.
So park for haggis.
So it's a potato made into a scone.
Because when I went to Iceland's game against Romania at the start of this international window, it was a considerably smaller crowd. I mean, it was sold out last night in Reykjavik, but they played two smaller games against Romania and North Macedonia, neither of which went that well beforehand. When I was at the Romania game, there were probably about, I don't know, 4,000 there, something like that. What they did in terms of food, they ordered a load of pizzas from Domino's and sold them by the slice.
How much was it? How much was it for?
That's not nice. That's all.
I think you worked out about £2.50. I like the way you're thinking. I'm only getting one.
Yeah, it's yeah, good man.
The thing is, I had to get more than one because they were only doing pepperoni, and my wife is vegetarian.
Right. Okay.
So she needed to get through a substantial amount of crusts. What about to have something approximating a slice?
Do they have a garlic dip for everyone, or did everyone have to use like a communal? You know, they've got the big. They've got the big ones now. Is there like a vat that everyone had to dip their crust in?
Is there a Domino's on the island? Was it like a little Cessna's flew it in? Maybe that's why it was a bit more expensive.
Yeah, probably.
Of course, everybody, if you want more chat about this round of international games, make sure you listen to today's episode of On the Continent. Don and Andy and David Cartledge are going to be talking about France. An awful lot of Memphis Depay chat.
Oh, Andy's, yeah.
Andy's got that twinkle in his eye. And the Bundesliga as well.
Yep.
It's going to be a cracker. Search Football Ramble Presents in your podcast app to listen now. Right, we're going to go for a little break and then we will talk about Wales and Northern Ireland. See you in a moment.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. How's your social battery right now? We're nearly at the end of the Premier League season, so I'm pretty drained. So many tense matches, and some not so tense, as well as point deductions, a battle for the title, and teams on the brink of relegation. All that suspense has me needing a well-deserved break. With the year in full swing, it can be easy to get swept up in work, social engagements, even keeping up with all this football, and we can spread ourselves too thin. But with therapy, you can learn to prioritise your time and really recharge your batteries. It's helpful for learning how to set personal boundaries and empowering you to be the best version of yourself, because you should spend your time on your own terms. So, if you're thinking of starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Just fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist and switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. Find your social sweet spot with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/ramble today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/ramble.
Oh, love that. Welcome back to the Football Ramble, everybody. That was home commentary of the Faroe Islands under-21s trickling goal, it could be described as, against France in the week. It ended 1-1, even though France had 30 shots and the Faroes just had the one. There's something
and that
glorious.
One shot was barely a shot, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, can you call it a shot? Let's leave that one for Opta, though. I do love the international break when you get the small teams scoring goals. It's a bit like when Andorra scored against Hungary when they lost 2-1 last night. The guy was so delighted to score. But of course, it was because Hungary were 2-0 up and there was, I think, about 7 minutes to go. And the Andorrans were like, get the ball, come on, there's a point in this for us. But the guy who scored, obviously when whenever they score, it's even if you're 6-0 down, it's a moment of celebration generally. And he was really wanting to celebrate. But his team was like, no, back. And he's like, I don't think you understand. This arena has hosted European Championship football matches and I've scored here and I want to make the most of it, Andy.
I think Turkey felt like that when they scored in the Netherlands.
Lovely old job. Right, it's time for emails.
If you've seen Vishnu Kebab Shop or Dean Smith up a tree, if your dad chinned a referee, send us an email, please. If you put Messi on a two shirt, if you sold our tattered cheese, if you've got something for us, show us up around .com.
I'm not really a kebab shop guy, by the way.
You are?
No, I'm an Uber Eats orderer, chase it home in another Uber.
You know it.
Genuinely, yeah.
Does that make you feel like a hunter-gatherer?
Yeah, it's like the amazing race.
I've never heard of such a combination before.
It works.
It doesn't have... You don't need to do that.
Well, you do, because you need to eat something, don't you?
Just go to the kebab shop.
No, it's better that way. Because you get it warm, you get it in your house, it's nice. Honestly, I recommend it.
You get it warm.
Post your phone, honestly, it's a thrilling thing to end the night with.
Let's move on swiftly,
Andy. Yeah, we've got one from James Davies, who says, I used to work at a notable second-hand electronics retailer in Blackpool. One time, Trevor Sinclair came in to sell a laptop. The laptop was worth several hundred pounds, and he was more than happy with what we offered. However, our manager waltzed over shouting, all right, Trev! At this point, I'd like to add, Trevor Sinclair had no idea who this man was. Our manager then said, whatever we're offering for your laptop, we'll give you £100 more. Now, I'm certain Trevor Sinclair isn't short of a bob or two, but with a confused look in his eye, just said thank you and accepted the gesture of goodwill. One of our younger members of staff looked on equally as confused as our manager turns around and declares, do you not know who this is? He scored the goal of the season in 1996, don't you know? Needless to say, we never saw Trevor Sinclair in our shop ever again.
Oh, that's a shame. Get in touch, everybody, with that kind of nonsense. Show at footballramble.com. Right, gentlemen, back to the international football. Wales kept a clean sheet at home against Estonia. The trouble is, Vish, they didn't score. They missed a number of chances. They should have won it, which is a frustrating one, considering they got themselves out of a bit of a pickle in their previous game, of course. And Harry Wilson, he's been so good for Fulham this season so far, despite the sending off. For Fulham, that was... my prediction would be Harry Wilson probably be the Championship Player of the Year this year. That's my prediction. I think he's been that good. And he had an opportunity in the opening minutes. I thought, there's my man. And he's stuck it wide.
Yeah, it was a very weird miss as well. It's like he forgot where he was. He thought he was in the middle of the goal, wasn't he? And ends up putting it quite a fair way wide, yeah. I was quietly impressed with Wales in the way that they had that relentless way about them and they kept going. And, you know, Dan James has, you know, had a decent Euros and it's nice to see him that, you know, he was bombing down the left quite adequately. I think the thing that really surprises me, and I know it's been done to death about Bale and Wales, but he was, and again, it's only Estonia, but he was incredible yesterday. And he really got that sense of like, oh yeah, I want to drag this. I don't know, you know, he's been quite vocal about his ambitions with Wales. Now, off the back of, you know, walking away from that interview in the Euros about when he was asked if it was the last time we'd see him.
He's like a Brazilian in his desire to play for his country.
Yeah, yeah. And he plays like an old Brazilian.
Yeah. I know what you mean. He'll be gutted that he didn't score. Obviously, there's that header that the keeper saved, and he headed one off the post and the rebound and so on. I mean, Wales were very much on the front foot, and, you know, the crowd were having a good time and so on. But, Andy, you know, that is two huge points.
You've
dropped.
Got to be beating Estonia if you're Wales.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, they were never going to win this group with Belgium in it. They're lucky that they're in a position that if they win their extra game, they can still go above the Czech Republic. Because I think you look at the Czechs in the Euros, this is a tough group.
It is a tough group. They were your dark horses, lest we forget. You often get pigeonholed with Turkey, unfairly, Andy, because when it came to it, when it came to signing your name, you know, your predictions and all, you picked the Czechs.
Yeah, and it is difficult. And for them to get second place in this group, I still believe would be a real achievement. But I think they've got away with one here. Because as Vish said, it's not like they played terribly. They're a lot better than Estonia. You've got to be beating them.
And they had the chances as well. But Karl Heine, with a fine performance in goal for Estonia. Arsenal's teenage goalkeeper, of course. Who knows? Will we see him in an Arsenal shirt? Probably not.
not if he's any good, no.
No, exactly, yeah. With performances and clean sheets like that, no thank you. So Wales is still all to play for in their group, of course, but they will be disappointed. And it's one of those ones as well. If you start the roundup of international fixtures with that performance and result, and then you get a couple of wins, you kind of go, okay, you pick it up. But to end with that, I think they'll have gone away thinking, that was a real chance.
A degree of flatness.
Yes, and you want to roll on the next round. So there we are. But I still think they'll be all right. But yeah, Czech Republic are no mugs, of course.
But you're right. Seeing like fans back in the Cardiff City Stadium is fantastic. I mean, I remember we did the first ever at the match in Wales when Wales played Spain in a friendly.
Oh, yeah,
the Millennium Stadium. You know, the Millennium's amazing. More for rugby, you would say, I think, than for football. And I spoke to a few Wales fans there, and they were just saying, the Millennium's a beautiful stadium, but it's not the home of this football team. Mm. Whereas when they're in there with a full Cardiff City Stadium, and aesthetically, it's not a particularly beautiful stadium or anything like that, but the size of it, the acoustics, they make it just right.
Yeah, if you were involved in the building of Millennium Stadium, you were the architect involved, and you heard the football fans go, yeah, but it's just not. What would you think? You think ungrateful sods, wouldn't you?
You say that like he's about to walk in. Well, here he is. To his face. That is true, though, because in the quest to build international stadia, international home stadia for countries, you forget about what you actually need in terms of acoustics. And when you think of Wales and their support generally, like it's a club team, isn't it? It has that kind of following, home and away. So that's
I would argue that most the British and Irish teams do actually.
Yeah.
I think
England more so now than before.
Yeah, definitely. But it was always there for England. Yeah. It just needed to tap into it because despite, you know, the sort of, you know, I think the small section of England fans about getting bogged down with this chat, it is getting slimmer, I would argue. I think England have got phenomenal support. They have done throughout the years, as I say, you know, despite all that. And then you look at around the other sides as well. I mean, well, let's move on to Northern Ireland because they were playing in front of a proper crowd in their home ground as well. And it really does help out. I mean, against Switzerland are a better side than Northern Ireland. There's no two ways about that. And it's a decent point for the Green and White Army, all things considered. And Baraclough said that against Lithuania, they put in a coming-of-age performance. Four goals on the road for any team is decent, especially for a side like Northern Ireland, who traditionally haven't scored that many goals. But he said against Switzerland, Andy, they became men.
Yeah, and we know how tough the Swiss are. We know how good they are. The advantage, I suppose, for Northern Ireland, who missed an early chance, which could have changed everything, didn't they? The bit of luck they had, I'm not going to say the penalty is a bit of luck, because that was great, again, from Bailey Peacock Farrell, who's becoming a bit of a penalty specialist, just as Switzerland are becoming known for missing penalties. Peacock Farrell made another good save from Seferovic.
I mean, it was a dreadful pen.
It wasn't good. It wasn't good, was it? He kind of like lumbered up to it, didn't he?
Yeah. If Peacock Farrell dived the wrong way, he might have saved it with his feet.
Yeah.
It was so bad.
It's a weird penalty, isn't it? Because it's not the first time he's hit a penalty, but it was a bit like, do I have to take this?
It was
Can't we just get the goal?
It's like he's queuing at the DVLA. Is that just... It really was. Like, it was such a nuisance to him. Yeah.
All right, fine.
The thing that really worked for Northern Ireland in this, though, is no Zerdan Shaqiri, because he was allowed to have the international break off to get himself properly fit with Leon. Because, of course, he's not unfit. He was on the bench for them in the last away at Nantes in the last game before the international break, but he squared it to have the international window off and get himself properly fixed. Obviously, he hasn't played a lot of club football in the last couple of years. This is exactly the sort of game in which Shaqiri would have laced one in from like 30 yards.
Yeah,
true enough. Switzerland were also without Granit Xhaka.
Yes, yeah.
You know, no Granit, no party, as Aberdonians will testify to.
Yeah, yeah. No antibodies. You know?
Yeah, but it's a good point for Northern Ireland, and they carry on. But Vish, what about Italy? They won their first match since winning the Euros. You see, it's not all perfect in qualification. I know they won the Euros. They've got the trophy. I understand that, everybody.
Yeah.
But they had drawn against Bulgaria and Switzerland. But last night, they absolutely steamrolled those little slugs from Lithuania. 4 goals in the opening half an hour. Easy peasy. Moise Kean among the goals. Nice to see him in there.
Yeah, it is. It is. He. I always look at him as someone who lucked out a little bit with that move to PSG, because a lot of players will have the kind of time he did at Everton and really fall away.
Yeah.
And then out of nowhere, he was like, "Oh, actually, come to the big stage. Mm-hmm. We'll give you a bit of an outlet." And it's quite nice because he's back at Juve now, isn't he? And
yeah. When Paris weren't prepared to pay for him.
Yeah.
He ended up going back to Juve. I mean, that's pretty good, isn't it?
Yeah.
I don't like that you refer to PSG as Paris. It feels like you're like all signed up to the, you know, you're
saying he's humanising them.
You're humanising them. I just think that you've fallen for their charms and you're like on board.
If I'd really fallen for their charms, I'd be saying Paris.
Yeah.
Ooh, yeah.
I wouldn't mind that as much, actually.
Is it not? Should we go with that?
Yeah, go on. Paris Saint-Germain. Yes.
The other thing, we appeared to get to the end of the mystery over Moise Kean's name, because it's always been Moise Kean in Italy. Then he comes here and it's Kean, obviously, because it's spelled Kean.
Gets back to
Italy.
Yeah, corrected them.
Gets called Kean again. Mm. And then an interviewer asked him post-match last night, "It's Kean, isn't it?" And he goes, "Yeah, kind of."
It is Kean.
Yeah.
Once again, ladies and gentlemen, the Great British Isles have got it right. Okay, why don't people listen
Give us
to us?
The Euros.
Again.
Yeah.
I love the fact that, you know, a player can make a huge impact in his home country and with the national team, and no one can ask him how his name's pronounced.
Well, yeah. There's a really funny situation.
It took us a while with Jermaine Genus, though.
Yeah. There was a really funny situation in South African cricket with this guy whose name is Andile Pitlochwayo, who people wouldn't really know how to say his name because to spell it out, you weren't really sure how to do it phonetically. And so someone asked him and he told them pronunciation. And then they went back to the kind of, I suppose, their producers at their radio show when they were doing commentary. And they're like, "Oh, by the way, you say it like this." And it turns out the guy who was there in the studio with them knew Andile for a while. And he was like, "No, that's not how you pronounce it." And he's like, "What do you mean? He's just told us this." And he's like, "He's got a lisp."
Oh.
Really?
It's not actually how you pronounce that surname.
Ah,
yeah.
Interesting.
Just like the King of Spain apparently had a lisp. Yeah. That's one of my favourites.
Lovely Ashley Giles.
Ashley Giles.
Lovely. Ashley Giles getting a shout out. Only on an international break.
Absolutely, yeah. Absolutely. Gentlemen, just want to touch on Spain quickly. They beat Kosovo 2-0, which means automatic qualification is back in their hands. That is also because Greece beat Sweden, of course, 2-1. The 4 points above Sweden, but the Swedes have got two games in hand, sorry, one of which will be against España. Interestingly, Pablo Sarabia wouldn't say Kosovo in his pre-match press conference, just referring to them as the local team. That's a bit naughty.
No, this has been a long ongoing thing. So when you have the graphic with the screen and the abbreviated team names in the top corner, Kosovo has been with a small K. When Spain have played them, because they don't recognise Kosovo as an independent state because of the implications it would have for recognising Catalonia.
Because it's what they also have a white symbol, don't they? They don't have the emblem, the Kosovo emblem. They just have like a white little flag.
And a lot in commentary, on obviously Spanish state TV. It's the team from the Kosovan region and all this sort of business.
Well, I mean, what would happen if they played Gibraltar, Andy? That's what I want to know. Just refer to them as the Rock. That's what I'd say.
That gives them a power more than you can possibly imagine, though, doesn't it?
We're up against the Rock. Okay.
Dwayne Johnson?
Certainly raise an eyebrow. Gentlemen, the World Cup qualification is over for another day in Europe, of course. But what about FIFA, though? Looking at the bigger picture, their dastardly plan for a World Cup every 2 years might be over before it started, which is good news. And this is not... I'm not referencing... this with what the World League's forum said, saying a commonplace event purely to serve their short-term interests is what the World Cup would become if it was every 2 years. I am saying this because Arsene Wenger has recruited Michael Owen and John Terry to help drive the campaign and sit on FIFA's technical advisory group along a host of greats.
Imagine having to sit through like a meeting with those two. And like Wenger, you know, erudite, interesting, handing over to one of them.
Mm. Why has he chosen them?
I don't know. It's so... Do you know that photo that did the rounds the other day with FIFA where like Ali Al-Habsi was there and you know, Djorkaeff was there, I think? Often we, you know, the players that we ridicule, we don't realise like how loved they are outside of this country.
Mm-hmm. John Terry could be one of them.
Yeah, and he could be one of them. Mm-hmm. We know Michael
Owen.
Man
had a fine career.
Yeah, he did. Yeah, yeah. Michael Owen, you know, he's been in fake helicopters and stuff like that. but I don't really get it because I thought they would have to campaign us or the FA.
Yeah.
So why would you get those two?
But then, Andy, the two of them have played in World Cups before. They've got experience.
But that's not... Yeah, but what does that mean?
It means that they know the World Cup, don't they?
People like them. Let's have more of them.
Now I don't have to play in it anymore.
Yes,
All in favour of it being every 2 years.
It's the equivalent of someone saying, well, he knows the club. It's like, they know the tournament.
He knows the world, yeah. Actually, I would argue that those two don't know the world.
They know it in their own little way.
Yeah.
And we'll see how that plays out. But yeah. What did you think, though, Andy, of the World League's forum, which I'm led to believe is not just some little sort of Reddit page on the internet.
Are they going to take down the Avengers?
I don't know. what Wenger, Terry and Owen are the Avengers in this, are they? Deary me. But yeah, so, I mean, World Cup every 2 years, sod that.
Yes, quite.
Yeah, we're all agreed.
There's really no more to be said on it.
Yeah, okay. It shouldn't even be entertained, really,
no,
should it?
No, it should not be entertained. We should be entertained every 4 years in the World Cup. Thank you very much. Don't take away our European championships. There we are, everybody. Thank you very much for listening to the Football Ramble today. It's been an absolute pleasure having your ears. On tomorrow's show, Kate, Pete and Luke will be in your ears once again. Kate versus Pete in Luke's game. It's a good one. It is a good one. That will go to all five rounds, that will.
It's going to be a classico.
It's going to be a classico.
What's the opposite of a classico?
Classico with a small C. There we are, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you very much, Andy Brassel.
Thank you.
Thank you for tuning in to Raja.
Thank you.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. See you soon.
The Football Ramble is a Stack production and part of the Acast Creator Network.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that?
I can't even remember.
Yeah.
You do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know.
I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
Late bloomers tend to have more curiosity. They tend to have more resilience.
There's stories and mythology that this country has woven around black men.
This is the cavalry, right? These are the leaders, the hometown heroes and local leaders. And we are.
It's a survival mechanism to just be like, worry of police.
What if everything we've been taught is just all wrong?
What's worth more than this fear right now?
And that rising after failure is part of the glory of being a human being.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.